Bueno.
Okay.
Buenos días a todos.
Good morning, everyone.
Quiero agradecer lo primero a la
Fundación BBVA. I'd like to start by thanking the BBVA Foundation and the Spanish Association of Symphony Orchestras and Ana Mateo, President and Manager of OSPA, because thanks to her, I am here and we do work together.
These wonderful
people, which are the Symphony Orchestra of Asturias. I'd like to tell you that I work in health and safety. I'm not a musician. I'd like to congratulate everyone. It's the first time that I'm here. And I want to congratulate the organizers, Natalie, Cristina, and the people working with the sound, the interpreters, because everything has been really impressive, beautifully organized. I also want to congratulate the speakers. I was here all day yesterday, and even though I don't work in a symphony orchestra, I found it completely fascinating. And now I feel rather overwhelmed because I am not a musician, not an expert. I'm a health and safety technician. And my mission is to make sure that everybody working in Asturias will not develop a health problem because of their work. And we had some issues within the Symphony Orchestra of Asturias, and so we got into contact with them, and we've been working together ever since. I can't get this to work. Do we have a spare remote? Because this one doesn't seem to be working. Okay, the first thing I wanted to say was that in Spain, companies are legally required to manage and mitigate their employees' job-related health hazards. And I'm going to talk about psychosocial hazards here. I was here listening all afternoon yesterday, and I love new technologies and the internet and all of that. But I don't know whether we're paying enough attention to our own internal health in our orchestras. Because if we don't do that, we will not succeed in the social media or anything else. In fact, I firmly believe that if an orchestra's management is not developing a proper strategy, if they're under stress, if they're constantly under pressure, they will not feel secure and confident enough to launch projects, reorganize structures, and so on. So first and foremost, we need to have a healthy working environment. That's just a fact. When you have human groups working together, there's always conflicts, chronic conflicts, because you don't get to pick your fellow employees and you may not get along with them. And eventually this can become a case of harassment, which is, or bullying, which is defined as a crime in Spain. And you, as management, you have to manage psychosocial risks. You have to have a proper assessment if you have an unpleasant work environment, if there are irregular distributions of the workload, and so on. So there is a legal requirement, which means that all of these principles of applied psychosociology are very useful to you, and they're easy to use, and they're cheap. But the problem is that we haven't really talked about it enough or spend enough time talking about it, because, of course, you're all about the music. And you're focused on the music and on the performances. And in the Asturias Symphony Orchestra, there are a lot of different job profiles. You have the administrators, you have the music archivist, you have people doing secretarial tasks, the producers, the, all of these people should also understand what their role is in this context, because if any one of these elements fails, the whole system can fail. Each and every element is important and essential. And here in Spain we have a problem, and that is that we don't have enough of a prevention culture. Because if we had a culture of prevention, you, all of you, would not be sitting here having to hear what I'm saying for the first time, because job-related health and safety prevention would be part of your culture, and you would not have the kinds of levels of stress and anxiety that you get in symphony orchestras. Because when you have stress and anxiety, it means that that organization is not entirely healthy. Health is a state of mental and bodily and social well-being. It's all three. It means bodily, mental, and social. You have to feel well, you have to be calm when you get home. You can't go home with internal dialogues in your head about whether I said this or didn't say this and what I should have said, and oh, it's awful. If that's how you feel when you go home, something needs to change. If you feel anxious, if you feel stressed, something needs to change. In the public sector, we don't really get to select our staff, and so you have to use applied psychosociology to manage personal relations in our organizations, because we can't select them, and that's one of the issues. We don't get to say who gets hired. It's a competitive exam process. So psychosocial action, you need to have a prevention department of whatever type. Get in touch with prevention experts. You need to have a risk assessment. You need to understand the risks in your job, and you have to have the right measures in place to prevent those risks. If you don't have this information, you're not complying with the provisions of the law. And so I hope that starting Monday, you will look for the information and you will start working on it. It's actually very simple. Whenever you, the top management of the orchestra, start thinking about applied psychosociology as part of your own strategies and approaches, if you just spend a few minutes thinking about the risks and understanding that in order to reach any objectives with your orchestra, you necessarily have to make sure that people and the organization are healthy, because that is an essential starting point. Otherwise, you're never going to get anywhere. The results depend on the people. If the people are not at their best, you will never get where you want to go. And so you have to think about these psychosocial aspects and about risk prevention. It's cheap, it's easy to do, and it's really just common sense. Often some colleagues have made all of this really technical and complicated and abstract, and since people find it difficult to understand, when people are speaking about anhedonia and meta-thought, that doesn't sound very easy to understand. But actually, it is. It's really simple. It's just ABC. It's totally common sense, and it's very useful, and it works. What I have found, since I am not a musician, I was happy to have a chance to come here and listen to John and Benoit and realize that actually I wasn't that far off, because they are musicians and top professionals, and there is a lot of stress in management positions, particularly in the public sector. Why? Because it's really difficult to manage conflict and to manage people. It is difficult. Often, when we work in an orchestra, we may know how to play an instrument, but knowing how to play people, of course, in the right sense, what keys to press, how to manage them, it's not so easy. And we have what we have in terms of social interaction, and we have to manage it. And so we will have to adapt to the people instead of trying to change the people and get them to go where we want them to go. Because sometimes it's impossible, because you can't change people, not really. And it doesn't matter how many times you tell somebody something, they will continue probably to make the same mistakes. And there are tensions between departments because there's lots of rules and standards that are not documented. You don't have clear operating procedures and protocols. And so people don't really know what they're supposed to be doing, what's expected from administration, what's expected from a section head or from the conductor, or you gradually work it out, talking to people over coffee and so on, but that can give rise to conflicts and tensions if it's not all set down clearly in procedures and protocols. And communication's not managed properly. It's all about gossip and rumors. And that's always going to be a problem. Because you will not understand your social context properly. I always say that if you have nothing good to say during your working hours, don't say anything at all. You have 2 ears and only 1 mouth, so you should listen twice as much as you talk. Listen, don't label people. Because you can't know whether that person's intentions are the ones you're attributing to them or not. 90% of the conflicts that I manage have to do with people explaining facts or events to you, which may have happened, but they may have entirely misunderstood the other person's intentions. And it's in that interpretation that the conflict arises, not in the events themselves, but in their own mind. They have built this story, which is causing them a great deal of stress and pressure. And your role as management is to tell them how those events went down in a different way that will not cause pain to them. Also, there's the differences between expectations. There's a lot of insufficient communication and clarity about everybody's role. And in the public sector, we have the problem that the workload depends on the workers' attitudes. If you are secure and confident, you will eventually end up shouldering most of the workload because you will take a step forward. If you take a step back because you're not so confident, you'll work less. You'll get less work. But if you work well, you make more mistakes and you have a bigger workload, while the other person who's taken a step back has less of a workload and therefore makes fewer mistakes. And that's where the conflict arises, which you have to work out. Because the person doing most of the workload feels bad, but also the person who's doing less also feels bad. It's also a risk. And for instance, in a symphony orchestra specifically, there's lots of tension between production, management, and the musicians. People responsible for the music department tend to focus on performances and do not think about managing social and relational issues. And they have to understand that they are responsible for the health of their section. And what's more, something that I saw in this symphony orchestra, you shouldn't let people get away with everything just because they're excellent performers. That's just wrong. If they don't perform well, you don't respect them. If they perform well, you respect them. Let them get away with everything. You have rules that have to be accepted by everyone. They have to learn them as soon as they come in. And they have to be respected by everyone. And I do understand that sometimes the way people talk to one another is because they're under a lot of stress. I do believe that. But if they're aggressive towards their subordinates, that's going to affect them, although it will depend on their personality too. And top management, of course, is under a lot of stress because they are afraid, because they feel there are huge expectations, they want to make sure there are no mistakes, that they have to make up for anybody being under the weather. And if the boss is stressed out, the working environment will be stressful. When you go into a company, you can immediately see the personality of the person in charge. If you can see it, if everything's disorganized, if during the breaks people talk or don't talk, that tells you a lot about the personality of the person in charge who's setting down the rules. And that's why it's important for you to keep in mind the concept of applied psychosociology, because that's going to help you manage things. And it's actually very simple. There's not enough involvement or participation by some workers who feel burnt out after a long time of job-related and social frustrations. And these people need to be managed. It's hard, and they can affect performance a great deal. And social relations go through different stages, great friendship, great hatred, and sometimes we don't understand how to relate to the people we work with. And something else that always comes up is where you have workers that are particularly sensitive and vulnerable to stress, and this can bring about addictions and other side effects. And in the law, there's a specific chapter where it says you must manage the workers' health and safety, but also you have to be very careful when you have people that are especially sensitive. So when somebody's pregnant, of course you understand that they are especially sensitive, they shouldn't work too late at night and so on. But when it's somebody who's especially sensitive to stress, how can you tell? Musicians are artists and they tend to be especially sensitive to stress. As I said, their training is all about the search for excellence and perfection, and that means a great deal of frustration. When you work with an instrument, I'm sure that you need to practice over and over and over until you achieve your goals, but with people, it doesn't work that way. So the only way you can succeed in the social context is for you to adapt to the people, not to expect the people to adapt to our criteria. And of course that is going against your own nature. It's hard to do. Also, if you spend a lot of time rehearsing with an instrument, practicing with an instrument, you have less time available to learn social skills. It's like everything else, the skills need work. And when you start working, you then have to relate to other people who also have poor social skills. And social contexts tend to be tense. There's jealousies about who's the better performer. Is it him? Is it me? Something that really struck me in my work with a symphony orchestra was the fact that nowhere else have I heard so many times per second the word mediocre. Never. Honestly, that is really very characteristic. Nowhere else have I heard people say that. I work with fire departments, with ambulance crews, with the police. Nobody's using that word all the time. Why do you? Do you understand the dangers of constantly using that term? The insecurities that that can create? Plus, you are labeling people in a way which can become cast in stone. Because once you're mediocre, it's as if you were going to be mediocre forever. It's not like you could have a week where you're slightly off and then you're better. And it might also be better to be a bit more mediocre but be happy. Who decides what's mediocre and what's excellent? Your colleague who's all stressed out, standing next to you, maybe he thinks you're mediocre, but someone else doesn't. Ultimately, the mediocrity simply builds insecurity, fear, anxiety. Is it really the best way to train a musician to instill all this fear and anxiety and insecurity because otherwise they feel that they won't perform sufficiently well? Isn't it a two-edged sword? All this stress and anxiety may actually adversely affect their performance. That's what I believe. And you have to know how to manage all of this anxiety and stress so that it won't adversely affect your performances. Plus, when you work with people like that, you have to keep it in mind so you don't push too hard. Because, of course, when you're managing, you have your own demands and your own search for excellence. You want everyone to be 100%. But that may mean that you're not managing them properly because you might be pushing them too far. And they might go under, because I personally believe that if you are too demanding and if you apply too much pressure when you're managing people in the workplace, it's the wrong way to go, because it's about reducing stress, not adding more stress. And there is a legal requirement, you can't argue with that. And you will end up in court if you manage people by inducing stress, because stress is unhealthy. And it really does a lot of harm. So be careful with your workers, which you manage. And it's actually all very simple, about training top management in how to communicate, explain, clarify. It's really very simple. It's about understanding that it's not enough to say you have to communicate. You have to know how to communicate. And if you here, and I'm going to run you through an exercise now. Imagine that I have some dirt on my forehead and I'm going to talk to you. Would you tell me or wouldn't you? Or if I smell badly or if I have a problem which is difficult to discuss. But the thing is, you definitely should say, you should talk about those things. Of course, the issue is how. And we don't know how. We either stay silent or we're too aggressive. And it's all about being assertive in the right way. And when you talk, and you talk about your feelings, and you know how to talk about your feelings, people will listen. A very simple example. Let's say that our anniversary is coming up, and I stay quiet, because if he loves me, he will remember that it's our anniversary, and will buy me a nice present. But, and then, if he forgets, there's two possibilities. I will explain.
Well,
of course, my choice would have been to remind him before the fact and say, hey, our anniversary is coming up. Remember, because it means a lot to me. That's being assertive. And then if they forget, that's okay. But still, the problem is when you're passive-aggressive and you're like, I knew it. You forgot our anniversary. You don't love me.
And
of course, he will react defensively. Why? Because you are attacking them, you are assigning motive to them, and they have to defend themselves. You can't tell other people why they do things and what they're feeling. You can only talk about what you're feeling. And I'll talk about this later when we speak about conflict management. So you have to promote communication, but you have to give people the tools to communicate properly. You can't just tell them, go and communicate. You have to explain to them how they should communicate. And of course, you do have your workers' reps, and that's very useful. The more people participate, even if it's your decision, the better the decision will go down. That's a fact. And then conflict resolution. There's always, it seems, a tendency, a natural tendency to think, well, when I'm in charge and I get two people coming to me with a conflict, I either ignore it and pretend it's not happening and hope it goes away, or I will assess the situation and say, okay, you're right, or you're more right, I'll think about it hard and try and find a solution and so on. But neither of these two approaches, in my opinion, is useful. The best thing to do is to ask the people again what they think the solution is. When you have two people in conflict, they will both be partially right in terms of what they feel, but you cannot accept either of their interpretations of what the other is feeling or what the other has been doing. And that's where you have to reframe the issue and say, okay, you could be right, but maybe not. When he says, oh, it's just that the second violin looked at me meanly. Well, you're assigning that maybe that's just the way they look, or maybe not, but there's always a question mark. So you have to try and manage rumors, you have to get the right training, you have to compensate for that, practicing more open communication, ongoing training and stress management. That's actually easy to do, is to talk about simple things like I've been doing here. Because actually, it's as simple as language being the key. Everything that you say to one another will define your emotional response and the intensity of that emotional response. If you say to yourself that you don't measure up, that you're mediocre, this and that, you will obviously feel worse than if you say to yourself, okay, I'm having a bad week, I'm sure that I'll be better next week. It's a different way to deal with the same circumstances. Just to give you an example, and I'm almost finished. Basic workshops that we run are all very practical so that people realize that these are tangible, easy things to do. You have active listening, communication skills, building your tolerance to frustration, assertive communication, and conflict management. These are workshops that we're running. And for example, one of the things that we do, you get two people, one of them has to draw or give instructions so that the other will draw these figures. It's very simple, apparently. But then you find that it's not so easy to do. I'm not looking, and I'm telling you what you need to draw, and then we compare what I had in mind with what you've drawn, just so you understand that communication is always rife with misunderstanding. And what this implies, objectively, is that you are aware of how difficult it is to communicate and to get somebody to execute something exactly how you meant them to. There are barriers in the message and in the listener's interpretation. You can't assume that communication always is effective. Sometimes we're talking, and I'm assuming that you've understood and what you're going to do, but in human communication, that's not always the case. And so what happens? That these drawings have a trick to them. I'm not sure whether you can see it from over there. But these are drawings that contain optical illusions. Figure one, that bar in the middle, is exactly the same size as the one on the bottom. But when you look at them this way, they look different. One looks longer or bigger than the other one. And figure two, again, they're the same, exactly.
But
since you have this optical illusion, it looks bigger, and so when you tell the other one to draw it, you tell them to draw it bigger. So if you're looking at something, and you're assuming that this is a given, but it's an optical illusion, how much more might this also be true in social interaction, which is so much more complex? So when you think about your social interactions, you should at least consider that maybe all of your assumptions and conclusions and interpretations about what the other side is doing or thinking or feeling could be in your imagination. And the only way to see whether what you're thinking is right is to check with the other person. And if you're not going to check it, don't think about it anymore. Spend your time thinking about more positive things that will make you feel better. And to finish, all of these measures that we've implemented in the symphony orchestra have been effective, and we're still working to improve the working environment, applying this psychosocial concepts. And finally, to finish, I love the title of this event, Opening Doors. And I think you should open your doors to applied psychosociology, because when you're healthy in the workplace, you will find it a lot easier to succeed in all your strategies, whether it be in the social media or with new technologies, and you will have more time to innovate and to motivate, because you will feel better. And when you feel well, your brain will think more effectively about new strategies and new approaches, and you will be a lot more competitive. Thank you. It's been a real pleasure. I hope that you have found it interesting and useful.